Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, welcome to Dare to Think Out Loud. I am Dave Scorpio, filling in for Mr. L.B. Bork. He is away from the mic today, but we'll be back next week. I'm joined by Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. It takes three men with testosterone injections to fill in for L.B. Bork.
Yes, and speaking of men, we're also joined by Mr. Mike Gatti, the rebel madman himself. Mike, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing well, gentlemen. I hope you two are as well. It's always a pleasure to join with you gentlemen to discuss the wonderfulness of America.
Yeah, and I wanted just to kick things off briefly here. I wondered if you guys had heard that the CDC released a report just yesterday or the day before where they admit that they do not have the coronavirus isolated. It's on page 39 of the report. And I'd want to see what you guys thought. Giuseppe, why don't you go first, since you sort of have a medical background here.
Well, the corona test has always been complete and utter, pardon my French, bullshit. And tonight on The Perfect Triangle, I'm bringing Dr. Judy Mikovits back again, because between Trump having the sniffles and the media going nuts and this insane amount of tyranny via the so-called COVID-19, and what's really insidious about this, Dave and Mike, is the idea that they've got the ubiquitous, omnipresent common cold, which is the coronavirus. It's everywhere. It's in every human. It's in every dog. It's in every cat. It's in every pig. It's in every cow. Keep going. It's everywhere. And so now they've transformed this, the mind rapists and the globalists and in the governments have transformed this into the new nanoterrorist boogeyman. Oh my God. Are you feeling a little sick? You might have the COVID. It's so offensive and so ridiculous. And people need to wake up and realize that, it's the common cold, and 99.997% of people survive even the novel coronavirus, which is the mutated in a laboratory for the so-called benign euphemism, the gain of function, which is a nice way of saying we're trying to make a bioweapon to kill a lot of people. But this one, again, nature doesn't want some little skin rash on its surface. Gaia, the so-called Earth, doesn't want some skin rash to destroy the whole planet. So, when you get these mutated gain of function bioweapons in the laboratory, they're incredibly deadly. You put them out into nature and they'll kill some people, maybe, a couple thousand, like when they intentionally released the mutated Ebola in Africa in 2014. But there's a big but. Even that one, they attenuate. There's something in nature that tells the virus to cool your jets and to become more benign. And it always happens that way. Every pandemic, eventually, the deadly virus attenuates.
Yeah, cool your jets. I heard that more than a few times when I was a kid. Mike, what are your thoughts on this new development? The coronavirus has not actually been isolated, and the CDC even admitted it today or yesterday.
Well, they will admit this. This is the standard playbook, gentlemen. They admit that what they're telling you is BS, but by the time they tell you, Bubus Americanus is so indoctrinated, they can't turn loose of it. So even when you tell them the truth after you have tricked them into destroying their lifestyle, they can't let go of the lie. And they enjoy the comfortable lie, and they're going to hang on to it. You could have Gates and Fauci come on TV tonight and say, okay, guys, it was all a big hoax. Let's go back. Let's play. 95% of the American public wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, I am noticing a turning of the tide a little bit just when I talk to people in public. You know, just the other day, I was talking to this, older lady in front of the grocery store. And, I just said, hey, you know, this is all BS. This is bullshit. There's nothing to this. And, you know, she had her mask on and she goes, you know, I've been wondering about that. I said, look, this is a plan for some very powerful people to take over the entire world and create a new system and using this as an excuse. And she said, you know, I've been thinking that too. I just didn't know what to believe. I said, trust me, that's what's going down. So I'm just seeing more people that are, you know, willing to consider that they've been had. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I love Mike Gaddy's description, Bubus Americanus. That's so accurate. I think that you're absolutely right. I was talking with an old friend of mine, gotten so busy between the now three Revolution Radio shows, plus being able to be guests on awesome shows like Mike or today filling in for LB. So that takes a good amount of time. And then we're doing the new daily worldwide video cast with the great Jim Fetzer. So I've been a busy fella and I have lost touch with some people I was more in contact with before this all started up in July. And I was talking to a really good friend of mine. And he was like, everything I was telling him that we talk about on these shows, he's like, yeah, man, I don't know as much about vaccines as you do, but yeah, you're exactly right. This is all a scam. The masks are a fraud. And he's a smart guy, but he's your typical conservative, you know, and has worked hard and made something of himself. And so if people like him are seeing it, that means a lot of people are seeing it.
Yeah, and I think Mike made a really good point that this is a deliberate, you know, strategy of confusion. They're releasing contradictory evidence, contradictory figures, contradictory everything about this coronavirus. So the end result is Bubus Americanus is, as Mike said, ends up being confused.
Well, guys, here's the other thing too, is once you have the fish in the boat, it doesn't help anything to tell him that that worm on the hook was plastic.
Yeah, good point.
That's a good one. Yeah, good visual. Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's true. So now we're being treated to this whole clown show that, you know, Trump had a case of the sniffles and he went to Walter Reed Hospital 33 days before the election started. Just a coincidence, I'm sure. And, you know, I just heard this morning that Nancy Pelosi is already saying that she's going to possibly use the 25th Amendment to question Trump's fitness to be in office. So the drama continues. What are your thoughts, Mike?
Well, Dave, this whole thing started several decades ago. We have to look as they put the pieces of the puzzle together. And it started under Reagan with the continuity of government movement. And they pushed that. And then Bush, W. Bush, the shrub, he enacted the continuity of government movement, the whole paradigm, on September 12th of 2001. He reauthorized it twice during his 8 years. Obama reauthorized it twice, but there is no record of Trump having reauthorized it. But then under the Bush administration in 2005, they pushed through the PREP Act through Congress and got it into the National Defense Authorization Act because they knew the American public would never support it as a standalone piece of legislation. But if you go back and look at the PREP Act, it authorized all of the pandemic BS that we're seeing now. So they set it up 15 years ago. Then as we move along, of course, you have the coronavirus at Fort Detrick, Maryland. Then they have some kind of an outbreak around there. So they shut down Fort Detrick. They move it to Wuhan, China, in a lab there, which was so convenient because Wuhan, China has terrible, terrible air pollution, and which meant that the most of the people's respiratory systems were compromised. So what a great place to introduce this virus. So it erupts in Wuhan, China. And then, of course, we have Fauci telling people in 2017 that there was going to be a pandemic in 2020 under Trump. And I firmly believe that moving Trump into the presidency in 2016, and I know a lot of people are not going to like this, but they moved him in there purposely because he made such a great target. They move him in, and then they've got the Russian hoax, then they've got the impeachment hoax, and all of this is designed to polarize the American public. You make the Republicans jump to his defense. It doesn't make any difference what he does. If he's a Republican, he has to be defended. And so on the other side, you give the socialists all of the ammunition they need to push forward with their agenda. And he just made just such a beautiful target. I don't think that was an accident by any means. And now we have it set up. You have the thing with him conveniently getting the COVID. You've got the 25th Amendment. You've got the continuity of government movement. You've got the 2005 PREP Act. All of these things were put in place intentionally. And now we are set to watch all of this come to a wonderful head on November the 3rd.
I think that's brilliant, Mike, really well laid out. I think that globalists led by the avowed communist hater of the United States, Yorgi Schwartz, who changed his name to a Greek-sounding George Soros when he's really a pretty despicable Hungarian Jew. And why did I say despicable? Well, as a teen during World War II, he would rat out his fellow Jews to the Nazis for cash. And that's how he made his first amount of money. And if you know how tightly knit the Jewish community is in various regions, you know just how despicable that act is, because typically it's the Jews against the world, not Jew backstabbing Jew. I mean, that's in their sacred books. They actually say you must never turn on another Jew. So that shows what Yorgi Schwartz is all about. And I think that Mike is exactly right, that the globalists really want to destroy the sovereign republic of the United States, the great experiment. And one of the ways they're doing it is with this color revolution. I mean, it's the same game plan George Soros has used in many other countries, including the Middle East, where you fund professional provocateurs and you get the weak-minded zealots to join in, and you guide them a little bit. For example, you just happen to set up a pallet of bricks right there near a construction site. So the zealots can, oh man, there's bricks. How did that happen? And so you guide them into burn, loot, and murder. And then sadly, with the globalists, the other side of the kosher sandwich, the one slice of bread being the Soros communist Bolshevik slice, and then the other slice is the Zionist parasitic capitalist bankster slice, and then that slice is driving the bus with inflation and with systemic wealth transfer in the hundreds of trillions of dollars stolen from mom and pop investors at the beginning of this so-called pandemic, which is really more like a panic-demic because the Bubus americanus was so easily frightened into racing in whatever lemming-like direction the globalists and the medical cartel wanted them to go. And then you've got, at that same time, the phenomenon of selling short. And that means the individuals who knew that the economy and the so-called big line, the stock market, was going to drop, bet against it and brought down the market by, I think, I don't know, thousands of points. You know, maybe, what was it, 7,000 it went down, or maybe less, but I don't follow it that close. But the point is that was $200 trillion in wealth from the mom and pop investors, from the pension funds, that went into the giant coffers of these globalist parasites. And then the average investor is so mind controlled, they're like, whoa, stock market came back. That just came back to what you had, which has now been inflationarily diluted. So you do not and are not able to think critically about how much was stolen from you. So they took everything you had and just put you back to where you were. And the net value is only 70% of what you had. But they can't see that. It's so crazy. Bubus americanus just believes what they tell him on the nightly news, believes what the CNBC says, believes what all these lying globalists say 24 hours a day on these propaganda channels.
Great analysis,
Giuseppe. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
Great analysis. And one thing I don't want people to forget is to go back to 2009 when the wonderful left side George Soros combined with the right side Koch brothers to begin this thing called a constitutional convention. And they seemed to oppose each other, but both had the same goals. Then they had the meeting at Harvard University in 2011 where they decided on these goals. Soros finances a book called Constitution 2020. Coincidence? Methinks not. So they've been pushing for a new constitution, and I believe that is also part of this plan at some point that it's going to become such a total disruption after this election that the powers that be will tell the American people the only way to solve this problem is with a new constitution. And let's not forget that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, wherever her warm place is right now, said that we should not look at the American Constitution for a new constitution. We should look at the Constitution of South Africa. Now, that is very telling, and she said that like, 4 or 5 years ago. So this wow. is not coincidence. They've been planning this for some time, and the one thing they have over everyone else is these people are extremely patient. They keep pushing ahead, and even like with Bader Ginsburg, she played a role. Her time was done. She's gone. But there will be someone stepping in to fill her position. Because common people, honest people, liberty-loving people will never be a part of this American government. They've been bred out of it totally. They have become the chattel slaves of government.
That's very interesting about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And, of course, she also admitted that she used the Talmud as her guide in life and her decisions in court. So that's interesting little footnote. Mike, what could you expand on this Constitution book that Soros funded? Do you have any details on what they're saying should be in this Constitution? You mentioned the South African Constitution. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Well, the book was called Constitution 2020, again, not to be redundant, but it was written by Lawrence Tribe and Cass Sunstein, two far-left-wing Marxists. So if you're wondering what's in the Constitution 2020, it should be obvious. I can't go into all of the detail. It's a lengthy book, but they have been planning on this. And ironically, with this wonderful maneuver with the Koch brothers financing the right part of this, you have as many conservatives yelling so-called conservatives. There are no conservatives in this country anymore. But you've got these fake conservatives screaming for a constitutional convention. We can fix all of this with a constitutional convention. If they read the Constitution today, they will find out that if they authorize a constitutional convention, just like in 1787, whoever is chosen as to be delegates to this constitutional convention, once they meet, once they form, just like the Federalists in 1787, they can do any damn thing they want to. They can write this. They can make this the new Soviet Union. They can do anything they want to. But you have, with a master stroke of genius, through Koch and Soros, you have both sides of the political spectrum begging for this new constitution.
Yeah, interesting. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on that?
Mike nailed it exactly again. It's the two sides of the kosher sandwich. The globalists, they want to destroy the sovereign republic of the United States. They want the U.S. to be blended in to just like a blended family, to be blended into the North American Union with Canada and Mexico. And it's shocking to me what true cowards the Canadians are. They had their own non-Rothschild central bank. They had their independence. They were running a surplus. And look at what's happened to them in just a, 30, 40 years. It's just pathetic. I thought if anybody would really fight that, it would be the Canadians. And they folded like the French, sadly. And there's a lot of French Canadians. But I would also add to the 10-year-long game these Satanists are playing is 2010, that Rothschild Foundation report that talked about four potential scenarios, and the worst of which being the lockdown, the lockdown scenario, which reads like a TV script of the last 8 months. So you knew they were planning it. At that time, the
lockstep.
Yeah, lockstep. That's it. Operation Lockstep. At the same time, the narcissist, deviant Bill Gates with his messiah complex started to build his vaccine empire. So all these things were rolled out 10 years ago, and they thought they had it when they intentionally released the Ebola in Africa in 2014. But, do you remember back in the news? Oh, they flew back one of the doctors with Ebola. It's in the United States. Oh, my God. And then all of a sudden the virus attenuated and the initial poor bastards in Africa, 23,000 of them died. That's non-trivial, of course. But that they thought they had it then, and they had to wait and try and come up with a new mutated gain of function bug. And then they looks like they thought they had it this time, because it was way more of a psychological operation than a physical germ operation, or virus operation rather, a microbial operation. That the real damage has been the way they've infected the minds of boobus Americanas.
Yeah, and you're right, Giuseppe. And Obama actually brought Ebola patients to the United States as well, not just some doctors. He actually brought patients over.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like all they could to get this spread, get it kicked off, in a real fashion.
I would posit that the Ebola was a practice session. And the reason I say that is jumping back to our discussion last week about why did the coronavirus hit now? And we, as we discussed last week, the United States in 2019, for the first time, was unable to pay the interest on the debt. As long as that cow was still giving milk, the bankers had run their practice game. They had played their, had looked at all of the scenarios. They knew this would work. 2019, no longer does the revenue of the United States pay the interest on the debt, and the interest is all that matters because the principal doesn't exist. So the interest that the bankers is getting is everything. So once the country no longer is able to pay the interest on that debt, the government starts seizing assets. Now, these 50 million mortgages that are going to go into foreclosure within the next few months are all going to be confiscated by the international bankers. That is more natural property that the bankers are getting because it was made collateral years ago, even going back to the Estes Park, as we've discussed before. So they're collecting their collateral now, and one of the ways that you had to collect the collateral was you had to destroy the middle class, and the coronavirus did that with thousands and thousands and thousands of middle class businesses shut down forever, which means fortunes were lost. A lot of people have no income, and it put us in the exact position, because if they were worried about their interest on their debt being paid, they would not have destroyed the middle class. So that's my read on it. You guys dissect that, if you would, please, and show me where I'm wrong.
Well, Mike, that's very interesting, because 2011 is sort of a significant date to me, because I remember in 2012, that's when they really began to do these mass casualty exercises and, you know, training sessions that included, you know, outbreaks of deadly disease and, you know, all kinds of different stuff, where they actually hired actors and, you know, people to play victims and so on and so forth. So they needed that time also to get the medical personnel trained, you know, like you train a dog, get them trained and ready for these kind of scenarios. So when they push the button, people already know what to do. So the timeline fits together. Giuseppe, what do you think there?
Absolutely agree. I mean, that was a real jaw dropper when Mike pointed out that the first time ever we're not paying the VEG, and that, I mean, we're not making enough to pay the VEG. And that makes so much sense, because those Satanists, those parasites, that's all they're about. And what a great way to use that as an excuse to pull off this whole North American Union thing, where, you know, when it finally comes about and they really try to pull the plug on the economy of this country, they'll say, well, you couldn't make your payments. You couldn't. Your debt is overwhelming, even though the debt has been intentionally run up both on the stock market. Here we go. We'll be back after the break, everyone, with Mike Gaddy, Dave Scorpio, and Giuseppe filling in for LB Borg.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point on Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, we're back here on Dare to Think Out Loud. I am Dave Scorpio, and I'm here with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals and the rebel madman himself, Mr. Mike Gatti. And Mike, I just want to go back to something you were touching upon right before the bottom of the hour break, which was, you know, you were talking about how these foreclosed properties are going to be seized by the bankers as collateral on the debt. That's absolutely true. And it's always how the game has been played with these bankers. And what's interesting is that the property values across the country are not going down. Especially rural properties, of course, they're going up because so many people are fleeing the cities. But for example, in New York City, which is literally emptying out, the place is it's unbelievable. If you watch any videos of people that are just walking around, even on Fifth Avenue, half of the stores are boarded up and have for rent signs on them. And these are, you know, properties that cost $100,000 a month to rent. But oddly, despite the fact that the place is turning into a ghost town, even property values in New York City are not dropping. In fact, they're going up. Mike, what do you think about that phenomenon?
Well, that's pretty simple to address. When you have the Federal Reserve or the first U.S. bank, the second U.S. bank, the Bank of North America, when you have these banks, which are not part of the federal government, have no affiliation with the federal government except for their silly little fake connections. They control the economy with the flow of money. And so as long as they tamper with the market, which is what they're doing, they can control and keep the prices wherever they want to. And that if you control the money, you control the prices of products. And so that is a simple, and it's been a boom bust society in this country since the first U.S. bank in 1791. So it's boom and bust, and it's controlled by these foreign investor bankers. And they always have these wonderful names so that you will think that it's actually connected to your country. The first U.S. bank, First Bank of the United States, was not connected to the country. The stockholders were anonymous. No one knew who they were. And when they came back with the Second Bank of the United States, the same thing. No one knew who the investors were. We have the Federal Reserve, and it's no more federal than Federal Express. It is a foreign entity. They control our economy with the flow of money. And it's not an accident by any respect that since 2001, this country has been at war. Nothing accumulates debt faster than war and welfare. And we have had war and welfare on steroids now for almost 20 years. So to get the debt to the position where it is. So the fact that prices do not seem to make any sense you know, when we looked at the stock market, how it was growing so rapidly under Trump in the beginning, people were not looking at QE. And that was where the Federal Reserve was throwing billions of dollars into the stock market every month. That's why you had businesses that were showing a net loss, like, you know, there were several of them. Netflix was one showing a net loss every year, but the stocks just kept climbing astronomically. And as my grandfather told me when I was a young boy, when the river runs backwards, somebody's messing with it. And that is a great analogy of the of what was happening in America. When you see stocks going up and there's no reason that stocks should be going up, somebody's tampering with the market. And when you see these prices staying high, because what you have there, Dave, is if I want to invest in a property, I'm not going to get that bargain rate that I should get that would be indicative of the economy of the time. If I buy a mortgage or get a mortgage, I'm going to have to purchase that property at a highly inflated price. And that is going keep the money up.
Yes, Mike, you know, you're really like a chemist. You know, your ability to distill the essential facts from any situation never fails to amaze me. You know, when you said they control the economy with a flow of money, that is precisely, if you want to just zero in on exactly what's going down, that's just such a precision hit there. And it's like the old Rothschild quote, you know, give me the control of a nation's money and I care not who makes the laws. Excellent. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts, sir?
My thoughts are, in 1913, the subhuman parasite, the internationalist Jew, compromised Woodrow Wilson and created the Federal Reserve. But, you know, the good people of America before that knew how to take care of themselves and use a bank properly. Remember the devastating 1906 earthquake of San Francisco, and it looked like the entire city was a goner, right? Now it's called the Bank of America, and it's controlled by these vile internationalist parasites. But then it was founded, it was called the Bank of Italy, and it was owned by a paisan named Amadeo Peter Giannini. And he literally took a child's wagon, you know, the four wheels with the sides, and you pull your kids in it. They had those wagons. He took a wagon full of money, and when the city leaders were going to say, "Look, we got to just, it's over, we can't save the city," well, Giannini went down to the wharfs, and he took a rolling cart of money, and he gave loans on the spot to the fishermen and the store owners, and he single-handedly doled out enough of his bank's money that he owned to save the city. And that's the American spirit that we need to re-embrace again. And we need, tactfully or not so tactfully, to become the 110th country to remove the internationalist Jew from power and send them packing to Israel. That will solve so many things.
Interesting points, Giuseppe. And of course, you know, the damage in San Francisco during the earthquake, most of the damage was actually from gas fires because all the houses were connected by gas lines and there was no way to stop the gas from flowing once they broke. That's because basically the whole city just burned down. Much more damage was done from that than the actual earthquake. Just another example how history is often, you know, warped and the true facts aren't really known. But excellent points. Mike, go ahead. What are your thoughts, sir?
Well, I totally agree, but the Constitution of 1787, gentlemen, was established by Federalists who were, in fact, still linked in many ways to Great Britain and the Bank of England. And if you notice through the early part of our history, the Federalists always sided with England until the first Bank of the United States charter ran out. And so, miraculously, as soon as the charter runs out, we have a war with Great Britain. War of 1812. We have been interconnected with these bankers in one way or another. And if you gentlemen would like it, I have a letter from the international bankers, basically the Rothschilds, to through a law firm in New York back in the 1870s, right at the end of Reconstruction, where they cite how the international bankers are buying control of the U.S. Congress through John Sherman, who was William Tecumseh Sherman's brother. And he was a senator. Oh, wow. And it that letter through the law firm and through the bankers is most intuitive. And as I've said, and I don't mean to be so redundant, but we have to look at this thing as a jigsaw puzzle. And you can never see the complete picture till you have all of the pieces to put into place. And so we see how these things happen. But as you mentioned, Giuseppe, the times have been, we have had periods in this country to where, well, you know, look at the Hazard Circular, where the international bankers said, look, we're not going to allow Abraham Lincoln to issue these greenbacks, because if he does, we make no money. And we also know that the country will prosper and they will grow beyond understanding if we don't control. And again, read the Hazard Circular. It states exactly what the international bankers intended to do. And in the Hazard Circular, they admitted that they owned and controlled the Secretary of Treasury of the United States, Salmon P. Chase. And where did we get the name Chase Manhattan Bank?
Yes, another coincidence. Yeah, very interesting. Do you have that letter handy, Mike? Because I would love to hear it if you do.
I tell you what, next break, I will locate that letter for you.
Okay, great. And maybe you could just expand briefly on the circular that you were speaking about for listeners who may not be familiar with what you're talking about.
Okay, if you will give me just a second, you guys carry on. Let me find the circular and that letter, and I will have both so we can discuss both of them in conjunction with each other.
Beautiful. Okay, Giuseppe.
Well, Scorpio, in the meantime, how about the ridiculous, clumsy, buffoonish false flag attempt of kidnapping the giant she-beast Governor Whitmer of Michigan? I mean, it's totally comparable to the underwear bomber, where the FBI totally entraps and guides these boobs into acting out, and then they pounce on them once they get them on the record attempting something. It's, what are your thoughts on the Whitmer kidnapping nationalists?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And there's been a couple of other cases besides the underwear bomber where the FBI sort of just, you know, got some kind of mentally ill, you know, crazy person on their radar, and then sort of, you know, groomed them and guided them like, hey, you know, it'd be cool to set off a bomb and do that, blah, blah, blah. And then what they do, there was one case where they actually made a bomb for this poor slob that was basically room temperature IQ, you know, mentally deficient person.
First World Trade Center bombing, gentlemen.
For him.
Well, I'm sorry.
And then as soon as he pressed the button, they arrested him. I mean, great, great detective work, guys.
Mike just jumped in. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, what I was saying is what you're describing is the First World Trade Center bombing. The FBI provided everything for that operation.
Oh, great point. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, then they had the perfect bad guy, the blind sheik. Ooh.
He has sight beyond vision.
Yeah, but that's a pattern that what they've done. And, you know, it's interesting that they're trying to make these people sound like white supremacists. They were some kind of anarchist group. And I saw a clip of the spokesman or one of this red-haired guy talking. And he had those big, goofy ear stretcher things, you know.
Yeah, the I don't know big what you call hoops those. That create a hole in your ear that the African indigenous people wear. And that's like the new thing with the – I mean, talk about a setup of a truly mentally weak, unhinged, easily manipulable and pliable, like a new can of Play-Doh. That's what that clown is. And who would be very afraid they were going after the big she-beast? We need the she-beast to be the petty tyrant. We can't have her kidnapped and by a bunch of white nationalists. My God.
Yeah, and you know, I monitored a few minutes of Amy Goodman this morning, and she was saying that they were upset with Governor Whitmer's COVID response and that it was too restrictive on the people. So that's why they tried to do this despicable act of terror. Mike, what are your brief your thoughts on this before we jump back into the international bankers?
Just another Sunday or Saturday afternoon cartoon, guys. These things are so predictable. If you're familiar with history, it's that the play keeps working. And I'm reminded of the old Dandy Don comment on Monday Night Football, you know, what, 30 years ago? Hey, boys, if the play keeps working, keep running it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. If it keeps working, keep doing it. Yeah. So, okay. So, Mike, you located that letter. Let's jump into that because this is just so important, both historically and what's going down right now.
Well, I have found the Hazard Circular letter. I have not found the other letter. I know it's in my files here, and I didn't anticipate using that, or I would have had it ready to go. It just came up during the conversation, and I promise you I will find it during the break. But the Hazard Circular, to lay the background, in 1862, Lincoln had thought the Civil War would last about 3 weeks, and he found out very quickly that once they got their butts handed to him at First Bull Run, and then it began to, or First Manassas, and then it begins to happen again throughout the Shenandoah Valley, Lincoln realizes they're in this for the long run. And he realizes that America does not have the money to support this, at least the Union. So he goes to the international bankers and he says, look, we need to borrow money, he and Salmon P. Chase. And the international bankers said, sure, we'll be glad to lend you all you need at 30 to 40% interest. And Lincoln steps back and he tells Chase, there's no way we can pay this. So he contacts one of his friends in Texas. And one of his friends in Texas says, hell, just issue money on the United States. Just issue that and make it, a currency and legal tender. And so Lincoln does that, and they call it the greenback. And so once the greenback begins to circulate, the people in England at the Bank of London are just going crazy over this because... we have to look at what William Paterson, who founded the Bank of England, said in 1694. He said, the bank has benefit of interest on all monies which it creates out of nothing. And that's the Federal Reserve today. So we still have this same group of people still controlling that part of the economy and controlling the world with that with the way that they control the money. But the Hazard Circular is most intuitive in this level, and I will read it to you. It doesn't take that long. And the Hazard Circular says, slavery is likely to be abolished by the war power, and chattel slavery also abolished. This I and my European friends are in favor of, for slavery is but the owning of labor and carries with it the care of labor, while the European plan led on by England is that capital shall control labor by controlling wages. Again, that's a very valid point, even to today. But here, continuing with the Hazard Circular, the great debt that capitalists will see to it is made out of the Civil War must be used to control the value of money. To accomplish this, the government bonds must be used as a banking basis. We are now waiting for the Secretary of the Treasury of the United States to make this recommendation. Now, the facts show that the international bankers had sent $500,000 through a couple of members of Congress and Salmon P. Chase to buy off enough members of Congress to do away with the greenback, and they got it done. And so they said, we're now waiting for the Secretary of Treasury to make this recommendation. It will not do to allow greenbacks, as they are called, to circulate as money for any length of time, as we cannot control that, but we can control the bonds and through them the bank issues. Bank issues means control of the country. So there we have the Hazard Circular. So this was the international bankers who had tried to loan money to the U.S. Union under Abraham Lincoln at 30 to 40% and had been turned down. Lincoln starts his own currency in 1862, and within months, operating through Salmon P. Chase, the international bankers have the Currency Act of 1862 and then the Currency Act of 1863, where they didn't do away with the greenbacks. They just said, the greenbacks are still there. They can still circulate, but you can't use them to pay a debt. So there you have the Hazard Circular.
Mike, that is such an amazing document. And it's, you know, I've never heard the game admitted to so openly and honestly about what these bankers are really up to.
Well, it, you know, what did the CDC just say? Once the people are so indoctrinated, once their heads are so full of mush, once they have become Bubus Americanus, the species, there's a truth no longer matters. Once you have the mind of these people, once you have their emotions, their brain ceases to function. And we see that with the masked up America every day on every street corner.
Yeah, amazing. It's just amazing. That really lays out the whole game and the method of control. And it's equally valid today, if not more so, because the bankers have only gained more power since that time, of course. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on the Hazard Circular?
Amazing. And it's so true that what is going on today, it's sad that Bubus Americanus has been so dumbed down that I would wager that 75-80% of the Bubus Americanus think the Federal Reserve is part of the federal government, where in reality, the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor a reserve. It's a globalist-owned private bank that loans money on interest to the U.S. government instead of the U.S. government simply printing its own money through the Treasury Department. It's literally like a science fiction parasite affixed to Uncle Sam at the base of his neck and just feeding it and controlling it now. It's so despicable. And yet the average Bubus Americanus, oh man, the stock market went up. We're all going to be fine.
Yeah, it's kind of like the beginning of Alien, the original Alien, where that squid-looking creature is over the guy's face and, you know, is implanting him with the creature that's going to burst out of his stomach in the future. Exactly.
Yeah, totally true. And it's sad that for the 20% of people like you and I, and especially Mike Gatti with his wondrous knowledge of original source history, we're stuck in this giant herd of Chicken Littles, and you try to tell them and they just freak out more. And then they look at you and point at you like you're the problem when they can't even see the real problem.
Yeah. Mike, the Hazard Circular, what's the background information on that? How did that document come into being, and what else can you tell us about it?
Well, it was published by the international bankers, gentlemen, in England. And so for years now, even till today, you will have people claim that this never existed. The Hazard Circular never existed. And that is through the influence of the international bankers and the owned and controlled media and owned and controlled academia. So the people who oppose us, who love the comfortable lie, are those who have been told over and over again, either in a classroom or reading a revisionist history book, and they believe that what they have been taught and what they have read is true history, when in fact it is the greatest propaganda scheme in the history of man. So the Hazard Circular actually emanated, and I have a source document of the Hazard Circular that proves its existence, that was published in, I think it was 1870-something or something like that, where the Hazard Circular actually appeared in a publication in the U.S., but after that, it totally disappeared. So it did exist. I have the proof of that, and I just read that. But that was the proof. They tell you so many times what they're going to do. I mean, guys, let's go back to 1981 and to the staff meeting, the first staff meeting with Ronald Reagan with the intelligence agencies. And the head of the CIA said, we will know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false.
Yeah, William Casey.
Yes.
So
he makes this statement. Do people today believe that? No. Okay, they told you what they're going to do, people, and you still don't care, and you won't listen. So they tell you what they're going to do. The CDC tells you they faked these COVID deaths, that the great majority of deaths had underlying attributable factors, that COVID just happened to be tagging along, that they died of cancer, they died of this, they died of that. But do the American public believe it? Do they take off their mask? Hell no.
Right. In fact, they want to make you wear one, too, because your safety depends on it. That's interesting. And this pattern of confusion just continues. It's amazing.
Well, it's not just confusion. It's also Panem et Circenses, which is Latin for bread and circuses. The Bubus Americanus loves its superhero movies, loves its celebrities, to the new royalty that can instruct us how to live better lives. I really want Gwyneth Paltrow to tell me how to live. And then the level of sports fanaticism is just crazy. Although they really have shot themselves in the foot. I don't know if you saw that the NBA finals. And when I was a kid, I grew up in Milwaukee, and the second year they drafted Lou Alcindor, who later changed his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And they went from being the doormat of the NBA in 1969 to winning the championship in 1971, thanks to this generational talent. And I remember as a little boy, we'd go to the games, and it was so exciting to see it. And I read the newspaper and watched the only highlights were on the evening news. You know, it was such a different world and so much more laid back and less invasive with the mass media. And now you look at these goofs like LeBron James, the great man ape, who takes all these pictures of him reading books like Malcolm, the autobiography of Malcolm X, but he always takes the picture looking at page one. So I'm sure he digests the first couple pages and doesn't need to go any farther. And anyway, the joke of it with ramming this whole burn, loot, murder, BLM down our throats, the ratings are down 86%.
We'll have to pick this up next hour. So everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne. And I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in Defense Condition 1. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
Hey, anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be
more...
Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. Oh, what? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, welcome back to hour number two of Dare to Think Out Loud. And I'd just like to remind everybody that Revolution Radio is entirely listener supported. So come aboard, become a Patreon member. Or just send in any kind of help you can. Come aboard revolution.radio and freedomslips.com and keep this bastion of free speech going, because it really is more important than ever. You're not going to hear the truth on the mainstream media, as everyone already knows who's listening to this channel. So, guys, I just wanted to pick up on something here and get your reaction to this. You know, the other day, Mario Cuomo, the little dictator, had a press conference where he has hired a gang, and I mean that literally, a gang of code enforcement officers that are going to be empowered to hand out tickets to the public and business owners. The public will actually face $1,000 fines for not socially distancing, and business owners will face possible closure and even arrest for multiple offenses. So this is really incredible. It's like we're seeing the government really coming out and saying, we own everything. You don't have any rights whatsoever. Mike, what are your thoughts on this new development about a gang of code enforcement officers that pretty much are just going to be like, you know, people from the Clockwork Orange going out and wreaking havoc? What are your thoughts, sir?
They started running this paradigm out in March, when they talked about going about hiring code enforcement officers way back in the beginning. So when I was in the intelligence community, and I use that, it's somewhat of an oxymoron, but I remember the old phrase used over and over and over again and during a psychological operation was, well, let's run that up the flagpole and see who salutes. So if they ran it up in March and there was no great outcry to stop those code enforcement officers, you knew that within some period of time they would be implemented. This whole thing for me, and I realize I come from a different background, but this whole thing for me reads like a plan for building a house. You look at all the steps that have been incrementally put into place as the assets to build this house, the framework, the foundation, the blocks, the wood, the roofing, everything that has been put together for the entire takeover of the United States as an entity. And it's like reading their playbook. They tell you what they're going to do. But again, going to be redundant, Bubus Americanus operates purely on emotions, Logic is their greatest enemy.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike. And I really like that one. Run that up the flagpole and see who salutes. That is excellent. That is so true. And that's part of the methodology. And of course, you know, this phony kidnapping attempt on Governor Whitmer is another example of that, because these guys were apparently upset about the COVID restrictions. So that's why the terrorists did their dastardly deed. Giuseppe, what are you thinking, man?
Well, one minor correction. You said Mario Cuomo and you meant Andrew Cuomo, who should really be named Fredo Cuomo.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. But everything else you said was dead on. I mean, it's just, it's so insane that the politicization of the common cold and its cousin, the gain of function enhanced SARS-CoV-2, which, you know, even though it has RNA snippets of HIV in it, RNA snippet of SARS, the original SARS, which stands for sudden acute respiratory syndrome. They even got a little snippet of a parasite that causes malaria. I mean, these sick bastards, you know, and the bioweapons. I mean, it's a half a trillion with a T annual industry in the United States. It's just so satanically evil. You can't even begin to discuss it. But, oh, no, we're doing it for gain of function. But the joke of it is the reality which the Bubis Americanus cannot seem to grasp is 99.997% of people survive it if you're under the age of 65. The real intention is the hypnotic entrainment phrases, the Great Reset, the New Normal, the Green New Deal. All these things that, you know, again, the attack on the sovereign republic of the United States to bring it into the blended family of the North American Union. And it's so sad that, excuse me, people can't see that big picture. At least a lot of people are realizing that, no way, Jose, am I going to get that new vaccine? I'm, you know, they're saying 50% in the polls will not take it. The real polls are 80 to 90%. Nobody wants that vaccine, especially that it's leaking out that everyone who tested that Moderna virus, I mean the Moderna vaccine, with its RNA snippet encoded in fat to get into the cell, which then begins to rewrite your human DNA. Nobody wants that. And everyone who's stupidly testing it, true Bubis Americanus, is having awful results. No one has taken that vaccine and is saying, oh, I feel pretty good. No, not one test patient is doing well on that vaccine.
Interesting. Hey, and, you know, the other thing that's coming out with this whole drama about, you know, Trump getting the sniffles, I mean, COVID, is that the only solution to this is we have to have big pharma treatments, this Reserva or whatever it's called, this experimental treatment that Trump got, which I don't remember a time when the president of the United States is given experimental drugs for a case of the sniffles, but that's what happened now. And apparently it costs like $100,000 to get a treatment of that stuff. And that remdesivir stuff is about $2,000 for a round of it. So we're being fed that, you know, without big pharma, you will probably die very shortly.
That's called the Regeneron experimental antibody cocktail. And the difference with that is, you know, the body produces normal antibodies as to fight any microbial invasion. Your white blood cells, there's five different kinds. For example, there's the neutrophage, which attaches itself to the microbe invader. And then there's something called the macrophage, which literally swallows it, releases acid-like substances to decompose it. So that's your immune function, and those are the antibodies that are generated to fight an invasion. So the idea that this company can create, you know, synthetic antibodies, or I don't know, that's as good a word. And they're not organic, so they are synthetic, to put that into the human body and have the body think that that's the way to go. It never works. There's always a price to be paid when you alter the balance, the great homeostasis, which is the body's systemic balance to exist, right? And so why, you know, my wife keeps saying there should not be for-profit pharmaceuticals. And she's exactly right. That should be, you know, an NGO. If ever there was the need for a non-government organization that's not run by the government but is funded by the government, it should be the pharmaceutical industry, where just produce things that heal people and return them to health, but not for profit. The whole problem is certain things like pharmaceuticals should not be done for profit, and yet they're done for outrageous, vulgar profit, and they don't care that the cattle, the goyim, you know, are killed or maimed or whatever. It's just insanity.
Mike, what would you add to that?
Well, one of the things that I would say, gentlemen, is that we can go back, and I actually wrote an article on this about 20 years ago about how the people in the United States military were used for so many of these experiments, and these experiments were done through, of course, the biological warfare section. But not only that, but we also have to remember DARPA. And there was a ton of lawsuits about these when people in the military found out they'd been used for these tests. Some of them had died. Some of them had committed suicide. Many of the adverse effects were being hid from the American public. And there were lawsuits galore, but those lawsuits got buried in the system. And but that article I wrote 20 years ago, I had quite a few links to sites on the internet. But I went back and checked a couple of months ago, and all of those links have been are 404s now. So to try to track this again is an impossibility. But in the meantime, gentlemen, I was able to find the aforementioned letter if and when you're ready to hear it.
Oh, go ahead, Mike. Yeah, this is good. Keep going.
All right. And if you gentlemen realized how many documents I have, and to suddenly start looking for one all of a sudden when I wasn't prepared for it, you sent me on a mad scramble. But thank goodness, with some references on my computer, I was able to find it. And here is a letter from the Rothschild Brothers, bankers, London, June 25, 1863. And the letter is to Monsignors Ickelheimer, Morton, and Vandergould, number 3 Wall Street, New York, USA. Here is the letter. Dear Sir, a Mr. John Sherman has written us from a town in Ohio, USA, as to the profits that may be made in the national banking business under a recent act of your Congress, a copy of which act accompanied his letter. Apparently, this act has been drawn upon the plan formulated here last summer by the British Bankers Association and by that association recommended to our American friends, as one that, if enacted into law, would prove highly profitable to the banking fraternity throughout the world. Mr. Sherman declares that there has never been such an opportunity for capitalists to accumulate money as that presented by this act, and that the old plan of state banks is so unpopular that the new scheme will, by contrast, be most favorably regarded, notwithstanding the fact that it gives the national banks absolute control of the national finance. The few who can understand the system, Sherman says, will either be so interested in its profits or so dependent of its favors that there will be no opposition from that class, while on the other hand, the great body of the people, mentally incapable of comprehending the tremendous advantages that capital derives from this system, will bear its burdens without complaint and perhaps without even suspecting that the system is inimical to their own interest. Please advise fully as to this matter and also state whether or not you will be of assistance to us if we conclude to establish a national bank in the city of New York. If you are acquainted with Mr. Sherman, he appears to have introduced the Banking Act into Congress. We will be glad to know something of him. If we avail ourselves of the information he furnished, we will, of course, make due compensation. Awaiting your reply, we are your respectful servants, Rothschild Brothers, New York City, July 6th, 1860. The Rothschild Brothers. And I have an answer to that letter if you would care to hear it.
Oh, yeah. You can't leave us without that, man. Come on, keep going.
Well, hey, you got to throw out a teaser every once in a while, guys. Okay. New York City, July the 6th, 1863, to the Rothschild Brothers in London, England. Dear sirs, we beg to acknowledge the receipt of your letter of June 25th, in which you refer to a communication received from the Honorable John Sherman of Ohio with reference to the advantages and profits of an American investment under the provisions of our National Banking Act. The fact that Mr. Sherman speaks well of such an investment or of any similar one is certainly not without weight. For that gentleman possesses in a marked degree the distinguishing characteristics of the successful financier. His temperament is such that whatever his feelings may be, they never cause him to lose sight of the main chance. He is young, shrewd, and ambitious. He has fixed his eyes upon the presidency of the United States and is already a member of Congress. He rightfully thinks he has everything to gain, both politically and financially, for he has financial ambitions as well, by being friendly with men and institutions having large financial resources and which at times are not too particular in their methods, either of obtaining government aid or of protecting themselves against unfriendly legislation. We trust him here in our office implicitly. His intellect and ambition combine to make him exceedingly valuable to us. Indeed, we predict that if his life is spared, he will prove to be the best friend the moneyed interest of the world have ever had in America. As to the organization of a national bank here and the nature and profits of such an investment, we beg leave to refer to our printed circular enclosed herein, inquiries by European capitalists concerning this matter have been so numerous that for convenience we have had our views with regard to this subject put into printed form. Should you determine to organize a bank in the city, we will be glad to aid you. We can easily find financial friends to make satisfactory directory and to fill official positions not taken up by the personal representatives you will send to us. Your most obedient servants, Ickelheimer, Morton, and Vandergould.
Wow, that's like the unveiling of the real game. Amazing. Giuseppe, why don't you take this away? What's your reaction to this?
Are those letters actually legitimate, Mike? They're real?
Well, if you want to call the Library of Congress real, yeah.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like an anti-Semitic trope. Oh, how could you possibly say that about the internationalist banker? I mean, talk about laying it out and for the earlier generation of Bubus Americanus to be fed on by these parasites. It's just, wow. I mean, to this day, it's only a million times worse. But and Mike has outlined what the parasite Alexander Hamilton was up to even earlier in this country's history. It's just, you know, a mosquito or a tick is always going to look for a way to feed, and that's what these subhumans are.
Well, guys,
yeah,
I
it's
think
amazing, and it's not exactly like the Library of Congress is fake news. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
Well, no problem, Dave. I thought that it is also very, very telling that, you know, Mr. Sherman becomes very popular and powerful individual in the United States Senate, especially during Reconstruction and towards the end of Reconstruction. And then I thought something else is most telling is during that era, suddenly from the Civil War on, the mineral silver out west became a great commodity. Nevada, Lincoln brought Nevada into the Union unconstitutionally in 1864 for two reasons. One was the silver that was being found there, which they needed to take control of, the federal government did. And number two was the fact that Lincoln thought he was going to need those electoral votes in the 1864 election against McClellan. So for two reasons, he brought in Nevada unconstitutionally. Nevada did not have the population that was required for a territory to become a state. But since when did these people ever let the law get in the way of their accomplishments? But silver became a huge product of America. And this silver is just coming into, and it's going to give America this newfound wealth outside of the parameters and control of the international bankers. So Sherman, being owned and controlled by the international bankers, pushes through legislation, and I'm not exactly sure of the year, I'll have to look this up too, but he pushes through legislation to make silver not, you can't use silver to pay debts, just like they did the greenback. So they demonetized silver in order to protect the international bankers. It's like I said, gentlemen, when you start putting the pieces of this puzzle together, it is unreal.
And I can see why the talking heads and the bankers always like to refer to gold and silver as a barbarous relic.
Except when they want it, because they have demanded, like with the loans they made in 1781 to the U.S. that they paid through Robert Morris, the financier of the Revolutionary War, the money that they pay, the money that they gave to him, the only way they would accept their interest payments was in silver and gold. So during that time frame, the silver and gold of America during the Revolutionary War was almost totally depleted, paying them the interest on their loans.
Yeah, and it's interesting how, you know, most famously Russia and China have both been stockpiling massive amounts of gold.
Well, an interesting question, guys, is when was the last audit, physical audit of the gold at Fort Knox?
Yeah, that's a very good question.
Well,
there's
Ron
been questions
Paul's
about
been
Fort Knox ever since I can remember. Go ahead,
Ron
Giuseppe,
Paul was trying to get that done for years, and he got a partial audit, very small, but there's never been a full one that I'm aware of in my lifetime.
Well, the last official audit, and we don't know if that was true because it was done by the government, the last official audit of the gold in Fort Knox was in 1957.
Well, there you go. I was born in 59, so there it is. Yeah.
Wow. That is amazing. What do you think the status of the gold at Fort Knox is, Mike? Do you have any information on that, or have you done any research on that?
Nothing but speculation. Research is hard to come by because, you know, no one really knows. It is so highly guarded. But there was also and I have tried to run this down back after 9/11, but there were some reports that there were some gold reserves that were also contained in World Trade Center Building Number 7, which conveniently collapsed that evening when hit by nothing. And so also the story, and I tried very hard to run this down in 2001, but it was said that the gold that was scooped up, I mean the debris that was scooped up, was put immediately into trucks. And those trucks went immediately to the ports in New York, and it was shipped out to China. Now, why did China want the debris from the World Trade Center bombings? Why would they want that debris? And there were reports at that time. Of course, all this stuff has disappeared now. But at that time, there were reports of drivers driving the dump trucks that were hauling this debris that was scooped up almost immediately. And why do you need to ship the debris out of the country, which makes no sense? But anyway, they were shipping the debris out, and some of the dump truck drivers, stopped long enough to stop and get some cigarettes at a convenience store, and he was fired for not going directly to the port, for stopping anywhere along the route. So the drivers were told explicitly, you do not stop for any reason. You take the debris, go directly to the ships, and it will be offloaded onto the ships, and it will be taken to China. Now, trying to run that down today is really tough, but I was hot on that trail back in 2001.
Well, and Mike, that's very interesting, because it, to me, this sort of implies that there might be some degree of collusion with China to help cover up this event. You know, I'm very suspicious at this notion that, oh, we're big enemies with China and China's a threat. I mean, they are, but we've done, there's a certain faction within the deep state or the shadow government that's done all they can to build China up ever since the very beginning, including the Rockefellers and other very powerful families.
Well, let's just take one state. Let's take the state of Arkansas. Who owns the majority of the rights to the timber in Arkansas, gentlemen?
I don't know. The Rockefellers? There's another family. I can't think of their name offhand, though.
China.
Oh. Wow. Wow. And that's Clinton country. And, of course, you know, Chinagate has been put down the memory hole for the most part for most people. But I remember that scandal, and it was basically the Clintons were selling and giving away every military and industrial secret that they could, and selling it as well. It was sort of a side business on top of being president. Well, we're hitting the bottom of the hour already, guys. So I just want to remind everyone once again to please help keep Revolution Radio going. Hop aboard Patreon, become a sponsor. Come on, revolution.radio or freedomslips.com, and keep this bastion of free speech going. It really is more important than ever. Okay, we'll be right back after this break, guys. Stay tuned.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take
the future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, we're back for the final half hour of Dare to Think Out Loud. And before the bottom of the hour, I was just sort of putting forward my postulate that China may have been an active player, or at least a player in the cover-up of 9/11, and the idea that China really has been built up by the United States since the very beginning. Mike, maybe you could see if I'm getting too out there with my conspiracy theory, and then I want Giuseppe to weigh in on his thoughts on China. So go ahead, Mike.
Well, let's look at one thing. We mentioned Arkansas, and also there is a huge trade of rice from the eastern part of Arkansas that goes into China, and we all know how China loves rice. One of the things that I found unusual when I was in Arkansas was a business card, which I have, that says that was held by the person named Yam Yi Wong, Yamyeewong, and he is listed as the senior trade advisor to the governor, Office of Governor Asa Hutchinson in Little Rock, Arkansas. Well, you know, if you look at Yam Yi Wong, then you find out he is connected with a lot of state governments throughout this country. And some of them have been discontinued. Texas discontinued operating with his business, which was called AM Pacific Business. You can look that up. I'm trying to think. American Pacific Group, that Yam Yi Wong is the owner and director of. And then if you went back into their files of their directory and looked at their senior legal advisor for this China corporation, you would have found Asa Hutchinson III, the governor's son, who had a very lucrative job in China as a legal advisor for the company that owns a great deal of the timber rights to the state of Arkansas. Has Arkansas changed from the Clinton days? Perhaps not. But anyway, the connections, I believe, that can be traced with that AM Pacific group are quite incredible. So that is part of it. So I do not believe for a minute that China is the god-awful foe. But there's one of the things that I was told in the wonderful intelligence community many years ago, and that is you cannot get America to get off of their wallets and donate taxes to the military if you don't have a bad guy. Bad guys are absolutely imperative because you have to have the villain du jour for the American public, and you go from one villain du jour to the other. We are never out of villains. You know, we got rid of Noriega in Panama. Then we went to Iraq and got rid of Hussein. And so then, you know, there was Gaddafi. There's always a villain du jour to get the American public into the fear mode again. So they have well been indoctrinated into the fear mode. We're afraid of something. And you can always cure that fear with an ample application of tax dollars.
Yes, the best enemy money can buy.
Mike, I'm curious, going back to the 2001, the rush to get that demolition, controlled demolition waste of 9/11 to China. Do you think that that was used as a cover to ship that gold to China?
That was the inference at the time, and I was really working on that. As a matter of fact, I drove to Cloudcroft, New Mexico, and met an official from the Port Authority in New York who gave me a bit of the story on this, and this was in 2001. I was doing my best to try to track this down. And he gave me quite a bit of information. He had moved to Cloudcroft. And, you know, ironically, we talked, we emailed back and forth quite extensively. We met personally twice in Cloudcroft. And then he passed away. So I lost that connection. So that was his inference, was the fact that there was some assets being stored in World Trade Center building number 7, and that they were gold assets and maybe even silver, but he specifically stated gold for sure that had been stored there, and he thought that that was the very reason to hustle that debris out of the country.
Amazing. You know, actually, I have been to Cloudcroft, New Mexico several times myself. It's New Mexico, it's rare. Not many people even know that city exists, or town. It's more like a town. Wow, Mike, talk about real journalism, real investigation. Way to rake the muck.
Well, you know what was also interesting about that Cloudcroft investigation? Well, no, wait a minute. It wasn't Cloudcroft. It was in a little bit further where there's a big horse racing track in New Mexico. Right now, it escapes my memory, but shortly after 9/11, the authorities there found a U-Haul truck that was had been abandoned. Well, hadn't been abandoned. They actually arrested a couple of people in that truck, and it was almost a reminder of the New Jersey situation with the artist, with the Israeli artist who were cheering as the Twin Towers collapsed. There was another U-Haul truck which had was stopped because it had not been, it was, their contract had expired, and they had put out a notice that the truck was missing, and it was stopped in New Mexico.
Hello, Mike?
Yeah, it looks like Mike dropped off there. Mike, are you there? Okay, we'll just have to wait, but we're not receiving Mike right now. Giuseppe, that was a great question about the gold, and you know, so the implication is that was some kind of a payment to China for debt or services rendered or something like that, right?
Right. I had remember back then I was investigating it, not primary source like Mike was, but yeah, that was the big rumor back in the conspiracy community of why would China take all this radioactive debris and cover it up. And so they were really looking for gold, and they got it. So that, and plus there was such an imbalance then with the all the manufacturing being moved to China that they wanted some type of collateral. So, yeah, it was awesome that Mike, he's texting in the Skype chat. Can you believe I was shut off? That's pretty much true. Are we able to bring
some timing? No doubt. yeah, I'm trying to get him back on here. Oh, okay. I'm calling. Okay. We'll see if he's able to pick up.
To take the car. Or,
yeah. But the bottom line is.
Go ahead.
Oh, the bottom line is there was so much parasitic chicanery going on all surrounding 9/11, and it ties back to the same traitors of like Alexander Hamilton, like the Hazard Chronic Circular, you know, the Estes Park we covered last week.
Hey, Dave, can you believe this?
Oh, good. We got you back.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
I hear you, Mike. Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah, we hear you, Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
Can you hear us, Mike?
It's not showing. He's actually – no. That was weird. He was on the call briefly, and then he dropped right back
dropped
off.
Dropped again, right.
Yeah, and this has happened several other times with Mike where he was on a topic that was, let's say, radioactive or hot, and boom, internet's cut off. So
right.
Very interesting right. timing. But Giuseppe, you know, I find, you know, Mike was saying earlier that he didn't believe for a minute that China is a real adversary. That's the play we're going to be watching very soon. They're building this up, the beating the war drums with China, when obviously they were built up from the very beginning. And I'm really of the belief that the Chinese system has been studied and made, you know, like a laboratory, and they've determined that the Chinese system is much more efficient at controlling a population and creating the outcomes that they want.
Well, creating the, I love his phrase, villain du jour, villain of the day. Look at how right after World War II, the United States, traitors within the United States, globalist operatives, pretty much gave the Soviet Union the technology to create their own nuclear weapon. They didn't do it on their own. They were given it by traitors factions in the United States. So that was the villain du jour for several decades, the Cold War. And then when it became obvious that there was a lot of potential to create China as a manufacturing hub and to make them the new villain, boom, there you go. Mike's back.
Right. Well, they had to have access to that cheap labor to build up the monster. Okay, Mike, you're back. Why don't you continue with where you were going with that? That was really good. Keep going.
Well, I'm not sure where I got cut off, guys. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Well, just continue. You know, you were pretty far into it. You weren't really cut off for that long. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, it was the discussion of the gentlemen that were arrested initially in, I'm still trying to think of the name of the town in New Mexico. I remember them having a large horse track there, horse racing track. But anyway.
Was it Ruidoso?
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Giuseppe. Ruidoso. And so this U-Haul truck, like on September 20th or something like that of 2001, was stopped by the local sheriff department because it was showing as a truck that hadn't been turned in when it was supposed to be. The occupants of the truck were Israeli citizens. And very quickly, I was told by one of the deputies there that very quickly, once that they were reported having been arrested with this truck that hadn't been turned back in, very quickly, the State Department intervened and rescued these gentlemen, and poof, they were gone.
Wow. What do you mean, poof, they were gone?
Well, they were no longer in custody. The State Department picked them up.
It's really interesting, Mike. The State Department has been essentially under the control of the traitorous dual citizen Israelis for 40-some years at least now. It's really something how much the State Department are traitors to the United States Republic and are trying with every bit of their effort at the highest levels to create the New World Order globalist membership into the North American Union. The State Department is a den of vipers. You get above like G12 or G15.
Yeah, that there is absolutely no doubt, and that goes back to my thoughts on what the CIA said about the media in a congressional hearing. One of the lead people with the CIA, when he was asked about Operation Mockingbird, and it was said, "Hey, do you actually have own reporters with the various?" News agencies, and the CIA said, no, that is not necessary at all because we own management.
Mike, yesterday when we were doing the television, the worldwide video cast of the new show with Jim Fetzer, Need to Know, colon, the Fetzer Report, and Jim shared during the broadcast, which was the first one to feature the intended starting lineup of myself, Scorpio, and the great Fetzer. And he goes, you know, I have a friend, a close friend, who was in that meeting when William Casey made that statement for the first time. And we were like, no way, wow.
Well, I actually have one as well.
Wow, that is amazing. Two confirmations of an absolutely stunning statement for a CIA director to make. And I'm pretty sure that it was Casey that referred to the mainstream media as the mighty Wurlitzer, that they could sort of play whatever tune they wanted played.
Well, I found it ironic, too, during this investigation of Mockingbird, they questioned an arrogant member of the CIA, and you know, at management level, they all are. And under this Senate investigating committee, they asked him, they said, well, you know, of course, you have to understand the black fund that the CIA operates on, which is basically drug money across the world. But you have to understand those black funded operations. So the Senate was asking this CIA gentleman, I can't remember his name at the time, but they asked him, they said, well, isn't this expensive to control all of these various people at these news media organizations? And he said, well, actually, Senator, he said, I paid more for a good prostitute.
And had a better time.
And he actually said in a congressional investigation. So they are arrogant with this. They realize their power. When you have someone operating who knows they are totally above the law and nothing is going to happen to them, they become arrogant. So they try to then once they're arrogant, they shove it in your face.
Yeah, and that kind of power, it's sort of like a cancer. It feeds upon itself, and the delusional thinking and the megalomania increases as well. Gosh, well, you know, we're almost at the top of the hour. We only got like 10 minutes left. I just wanted to ask Mike, you know, we're on the topic of China, and I want to get your take on this too, Giuseppe. What do you guys think about war with China as being sort of a plan B or just a way to accelerate the chaos? Where do you think they're going with that, Mike?
Well, let me run a scenario by you, okay? Here's the scenario. We end up with an election, and it's highly disputed. We've got people in the streets. Of course, we don't have to worry about the conservatives getting into the streets because they're going to sit on their ass waiting for the next election. So they're never going to mobilize and ever be effective in the fight for liberty. Defensively, they may become defensive, but they will never become offensive toward liberty because they are sold on the vote. But let's take, for instance, that Trump wins, hypothetically. Trump is declared the winner of the election. The Antifa and BLM, which are mobilizing all over the country, they suddenly go into the streets. We have mass chaos. And it becomes such a traumatic experience for people who can't even leave their homes almost that Trump then declares martial law and says, okay, I am bringing in UN troops to help. Well, the conservative right's going to jump up and down and cheer because we're being saved by Trump. But what if these UN troops are all China's? just a scenario, just for something.
Oh, wow. You know, I've never heard that scenario. That is very interesting, Mike.
Here's how what my scenario take is that there's currently 1.4 quadrillion. That's 1,000 trillion. And 1 trillion is 1,000 billion. 1.4 quadrillion in derivative debt worldwide with the great internationalist Jew casino Wall Street. There is no way that 1.4 quadrillion in gambling debt can ever be paid. And it's all coming due. And so I think the great reset is going to be the war. War is coming. The war is going to be a false flag, like knocking off a nuke and blaming Iran, or knocking off a nuke and blaming China. I think they want a physical war to kill a lot of people because they're all eugenicists and they all talk about the overpopulation. So I think that my scenario is false flag with some powerful device that kills, I don't know, 100,000 Americans, maybe more, and that's going to pull everybody together to fight the villain du jour, as Mike likes to – that's a brilliant phrase.
Well, what we end up with in that scenario, and I certainly wouldn't discount that, Giuseppe, it's well thought out. What we end up with in such an attack, which may play right into their hands, I have seen models of what would happen if we had because, you know, if you will remember during the days of October under – of course, you were just an infant at the time. During the days of October with Kennedy and the projections, we actually have projections on if a nuke hit the United States. And I think it's even more relevant now that the initial deaths from the bomb itself will not be anywhere near as large as the aftermath of the initial explosion and the chaos and the mayhem that occurs where American citizens would actually end up killing each other to try to get provisions. And there was a projection done on that by the Joint Chiefs of Staff in 1963. And I was able to see that years later, but it was a projection on what would happen if a nuke hit the United States.
Yeah. And then of course, if that scenario did play out, a part or all of the power grid would go down. You'd have nuclear power plants melting down, you know, part of the green energy of the future that they want for us. So, yes, this could get very sideways very quickly.
Well, the one thing we know for sure is no matter how the game played out, we lose.
Yeah.
Oh, I just thought of another possible scenario that doesn't involve the nuke and serves even more of the cabal elements. How about this? So they're already laying the groundwork that it's the China flu. It's the China flu. So what about they release one of their really pretty powerful bioweapons, kill about 100,000 Americans in California, and say, China did it. China, like Mr. Rogos, China. And there they don't have all the nuclear radiation fallout. They get to get their mandatory vaccine and they get their war. To me, that's even a more powerful scam to run.
Well, there are so many, and I have actually kept myself awake at times trying to figure out all the different scenarios. I just don't. The one thing I do not see is if the Democrats are declared winners, I do not see the massive revolt that would happen if it went the other way. Because if they came out and said, okay, the election was stolen from Trump, the conservative right in this country is going to say, oh, well, we've got another election. We'll just have to wait. They will yeah. not become mobilized.
Well, there'll be a lot of very angry tweets if that happens.
Oh, yes. A lot of tweets and a lot of Facebook stuff. And there will be a lot of weeping, wailing and gnashing of teeth. But there will be no action from the conservative right.
Yeah. And I think that's another scenario is that if we did have a Harris presidency, a Joe Biden presidency, then we'd have a nationwide mask mandate. We'd be entering into the new Green Deal and the Paris Climate Accords, and we'd basically be sailing off into a brave new world.
Well, I agree with that. And I had made one note. I want to throw this in. Back in the, and this is jumping back, but during the mortgage fraud and stuff in 2008 and 2009, I did some investigation into that. And I found out that almost immediately after these banks, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, these other banks, after they foreclosed on these mortgages on these homes, within days, those properties were transferred to the U.S. government.
Wow. Okay, we're down to the final 2 minutes. Giuseppe, let me get your final thoughts there, man.
Well, it was an honor to sit in with the Rebel Madman and the Mad Rebel, David Scorpio. And I thought we addressed a lot of really salient issues as to the villains du jour that we face. And I think that the sad fact about the white majority, the conservative white majority being stable, is they put up with the Clinton traitorism. They put up with the traitorous activities of the biter of pillows, Barack Hussein Obama. So they will certainly not riot over Joe Biden.
Good point. Mike, what are your final thoughts in the last minute we have here?
Well, what I would say is amen. The conservative right in this country will never riot about anything, because they have this pacifier firmly entrenched between their teeth called elections. And all of their faith is in that. That is their mantra. That is their holy grail. And nothing else will ever matter. And they will sit right there till they starve to death, sucking on that pacifier.
Well, yeah. And one thing I've learned about modern day conservatism is that one of the bedrocks of being a conservative is being a staunch supporter of Israel. That's one of the most important things, apparently.
Obviously. I mean, you know, you can't be a strong right wing Republican if you don't support Israel. It will not be tolerated.
No, true. And of course, Joe Biden has declared that he's a Zionist as well. So that's one thing that both parties seem to agree on very, very staunchly. Yes.
Well,
amazing.
When the great Barack Obama won the nomination from Hillary Clinton in that highly contested contest, who was the first group that he went immediately to speak to?
Yes, who? Of course. Bingo. Okay, great way to end the show. Perfect. Okay, thanks for listening, everybody. And LB will be back next week for Dare to Think Out Loud. You guys take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.